Your name?
Chris Bergfalk.
Chris Bergfalk, as a teacher in the District of Columbia Public Schools, this Labor Day, what are your thoughts about Schools Chancellor Michelle Rhee in regards to how she has treated some of our most important public servants, public school teachers?
Yeah, she's really poisoned the education system, and that's really what I want to talk about today. Teachers have always been the best advocates for children in the school system. They've always been, you know, during the school year, children spend more time with their classroom teacher than with their parents, and teachers go into the education field to teach because they care deeply about children and they want to do the best they can for children. And what we've seen Michelle Rhee do with DCPS and with education on the national stage with her rhetoric is to turn education and schools upside down.
Upside down. Explain that.
Well, Dr. Jerry Wiest, the superintendent of Montgomery County Schools, he just announced he's retiring. And he has one of the best track records of any superintendent. And the Montgomery County public school system leads the nation under multiple measures. And before he came, and I just read this the other day, before he came, it says that teachers have been pushing for reform for years. And before Jerry Wiest's arrival, no one would listen. Now teachers are part of the top decision makers in his reform efforts, and they've been wildly successful. Teachers have always been at the forefront of reform. They, especially in a school system like DCPS, teachers have been the ones that have fought for supplies, fought for textbooks, fought for doing what's right for children, and also fought against corruption in the school system that hurts children. They've always been at the forefront of reform.
Chris Bergfalk, can you talk about Jerry Wiest's red versus green model? It may be the opposite approach of what's been taken here in D.C. with Chancellor Michelle Rhee.
Absolutely. Wiest decided to allocate more resources to the 66 elementary schools with the highest number of minority and ESL students, and he dubbed those the red schools, versus the 65 affluent green schools. And one of the things he did right away was he gave to the red schools, the schools with the greatest needs, and also the schools that were the furthest behind, he allocated an additional $2,000 more per child. What we've seen in DCPS is the exact opposite. Hart Middle School, high needs, low performing middle school in DCPS, and one that has had a ton of problems under Michelle Rhee's administration, filled with violence. At one point during her tenure, that school had the lowest per pupil allocation of dollars in the city, the lowest of all the schools. That makes absolutely no sense. And Jerry Wiest did the exact opposite. And if we look at capital spending in the city under Michelle Rhee, again, we see the education system turned upside down. In Jerry Wiest's education model, the schools with the highest needs received the most dollars. In Michelle Rhee's model of flipping up education upside down, we see the opposite. Ward 8, before Michelle Rhee came, there was a lot fewer dollars for capital spending.
Just east of the river, Anacostia.
That's right. And before Michelle Rhee came, schools were in disrepair across the city. They have a much smaller capital budget to work with. Before Michelle Rhee came, Ward 8 had $13.25 was being spent per gross square foot for school space in Ward 8. Under Michelle Rhee, it bumped up to $54 a square foot. That's a great increase. However, Ward 3, before Michelle Rhee came, was getting $20 a square foot, but she bumped it up to $118 a square foot. That's six times what it was getting before. Now we compare Ward 3. Ward 3 is the wealthiest ward in the city. It's Cleveland Park, DuPont Circle, I think.
DuPont Circle is War II. It's a little...
War II, right.
But it's so interesting to note because the line that we hear is that money is evenly distributed. And what you're saying is that, well, WISTA wasn't evenly distributed in Montgomery County. It was distributed more heavily towards where it was needed. Whereas in D.C., it's going the opposite direction. And you, when you mentioned Hart Middle School, Hart Middle School is still open. Well, one of the first acts that Michelle Reed did when she came in was close 23 schools. But not, these schools were not closed in Ward 3. They were closed in areas where these schools had the most need.
Yeah, that's correct. And actually, it doesn't make a lot of sense for several reasons. Ward 3 and Ward 2, the Georgetown part of Ward 2 and Ward 3 actually has the smallest number of school-age residents, and they make up the smallest percentage of the DCPS population. Most of the kids that go to public schools in DCPS reside east of the park. Ward 8 may have the largest population of DC public school students. However, she closed the schools in the neighborhoods where the kids actually live, and a lot of those kids are going to schools outside their neighborhood, out of boundary, and they're going to school in Ward 3. But education reform has to be about changing the inequities that are in our school system and in our society. It has to begin there. Dr. Jerry Wiest, I just read this, a parent who lived in the Green Zone in Montgomery County. So a parent who lived and went to a wealthy, affluent school that was high-performing in Montgomery County asked Jerry Wiest how his child could get all-day kindergarten because in Montgomery County they didn't have it available. And the superintendent's response was, "That's simple." This is a direct quote. "That's simple. Move to the red zone." That's a very strong statement about making it a priority to close achievement gaps and to really help the low-performing schools and stop Montgomery County from being a county of two school systems.
I just want to jump in because the significance of what he said needs to be repeated. He's talking to a wealthier resident of Montgomery County who says, "What can I do to get all-day pre-K?" He said, "That's fine. Just move to an area that's poorer because we're going to emphasize, we're going to place resources where there is greatest need." Very different from what's happened in D.C. under Schools Chancellor Michelle Reed.
Absolutely. And we just saw that Ward 3 and then Ward 2 under Michelle Reed for capital spending, they spend $152 per square foot from 07 to 09. So we see the two wealthiest areas. Ward 2 is DuPont Circle, Georgetown. Ward 3 is Cleveland Park. The neighborhoods with the highest concentration of white students, white families, and money and income, receiving by far the most amount of money compared to Ward 8, which is the poorest area in the city, receiving only $54 a square foot.
Poorest with the most students.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's what we've seen then. Montgomery County, where Jerry Wiest tells the affluent family, that move to the red zone, we're going to focus. And the green zone, the green schools are doing well. And the wealthy schools in Ward 3 and Ward 2 are doing well. They make AYP every year. There's nothing wrong with those schools. They're doing fantastic. Now, here's what we've seen under Montgomery County with this new emphasis by Jerry Wiest. It says the gap between African Americans and whites on NCLB tests narrowed from 32 points to 13 points in 7 years.
NCLB, No Child Left Behind. So the gaps in Montgomery County are narrowing. Now, you've testified several times before the D.C. Council, and what you've testified at is, despite some of the press releases put out by Michelle Reed, gaps, in fact, under Reed, under Fenty, the achievement gap has widened.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, Jerry Wiest narrowed the gap from 32 points to 13 points, a 19 points of narrowing that gap. Here's what we've seen in DCPS using the NCLB, the No Child Left Behind test, which is our DC CAS. Prior to Michelle Reed, from 06 to 07, the gap between poor students and non-poor students was closing. It closed by 6% for elementary school. in her first year in 2008, the gap increased by 4%. In 2009, it increased by 9%. In 2010, it increased by 4%. So while Jerry Wiest, over 7 years, closed the gap by 19%, Michelle Rhee, over 3 years, increased that gap, widened that gap by 17%.
Chris Bergfock, you were a finalist for 2009 Teacher of the Year.
Yes, I was.
You're a graduate of DCPS, a father of students at DCPS. So this is an institution that you know something about.
Absolutely, and I care deeply about it. And in terms of that Teacher of the Year honor, I mean, I'm grateful for it. It is an interesting story because I got a call from the chancellor's office last fall in 2009, and the chancellor's office was the office that were the individuals that nominated me for that position, for that honor. But I feel very strongly about what's happening in our school system. I've grown up here, attended school here, always lived here. My family has deep roots here. My brothers and my sisters went to DCPS public schools, and I have three kids who are in DC public schools right now. And what's happened under this administration is wrong and taking us in the wrong direction. And it's really poisoned, you know, the core of our educational system. The core of the educational system is the teacher, and is the teacher's relationship with the student, and is the teacher's relationship with parents. That's the core. And now what we've seen is Michelle Rhee has been denigrating teachers and blaming teachers for all that's wrong in the school system. And that's poisoned those basic the relationships that make up the basis of our educational system. And now students and their parents are fearful, or they don't trust their teachers, or wondering if these are the teachers that these teachers are the reason that the school system is failing, if they should work with these teachers, or if these teachers are the problem, these teachers are going to take their students backwards or harm their students. It's really undermined the whole thing, and the greatest damage has been that it's silenced the most important voice in school reform, that of teachers, the teachers who care the most about students. If you were to take a survey of classroom teachers and people who work in education policy firms, who work in Michelle Rhee's central office, I would like to know what percentage of those groups reach into their pockets every day to buy backpacks, to buy pencils, to buy markers, to buy books for their children, for the children in DCPS, in these public schools. Who cares the most about those children succeeding? And who spends every minute and will do anything possible for those students to succeed? It is the people in the classroom.
Who are now referred to as human capital by school's chancellor, Michelle Rhee. And I have to think about this a few months back, 286, I think it was, teachers were riffed, reduction in force. And then Michelle Rhee was speaking to Fast Company, a magazine, and she said they had beaten kids, had sex with children. These were unfounded accusations, and it seems appropriate on Labor Day to talk about the labor that, as you point out, should be respected, but in fact has been denigrated by the school's chancellor.
Absolutely. Those statements were awful. She's made those statements time and time again. Michelle Rhee actually came to our school last year to meet with faculty for us to, you know, hear or us to express our concerns. The night before she came, PBS aired on the Jim Lehrer News Hour, aired a segment of I think Learning Matters, the name of the segment. And on that segment, Michelle Rhee's director of professional development said 50% of all teachers in DCPS don't have the right attitude. And then she followed up by saying, and more than that, don't have the content and knowledge necessary to teach in DCPS, to teach students. That's an absurd comment. Michelle Reeves says she's data driven. I would really like to see the data on that. That's an absurd comment. It achieves nothing for school reform other than to create a national reputation for somebody as a hard talking, down to business reformer. And what it does, what it really does, and this is the tragedy, is not only does it poison those relationships we talked about earlier, but it also takes the focus off of real education reform. Human capital is not the problem. Dr. Jerry Wiest, they asked him in an interview on WAMU, I just heard it the other day, and they said, well, what do you attribute your success to? And what is your advice for those who are going to come after you? And he said two things. You have the right people. And we do have the right people. We have people that care about children, who will do anything they can for children, and who teach not for big paychecks, who teach not for prestige, and certainly not for prestige in DCPS. The second thing he said is not only do you have the right people, he said, support what happens in the classroom. And we have seen the exact opposite in DCPS. There has been no support for what happens in the classroom.
Chris Bergfock, you mentioned that Michelle Rhee says she is data-driven, and I don't know anyone who has really pored over the data more than you have. And you've highlighted several instances where the press releases that are being released vary quite different. They vary quite widely from the conclusions that you've drawn looking at the numbers. Can you talk about some of these discrepancies?
Sure. I think what we've learned about being data-driven in DCPS is being data-driven depends on who's driving. And specifically what I want to say about that is teachers have always been data-driven. You know, we teach, we assess, you know, we look at how and we reflect. How did the kids do? Did they get what we taught? Where are the holes? Where do we need to go back and reteach? What did we do wrong? That's always been a part of the teaching profession. The use of data for Michelle Rhee is not about reflecting on what's went wrong. The data is not being used that way. The data that Michelle Rhee is being data-driven about is only being used for her national reputation. And here are the problems. I haven't seen anything where it said, you know, we see this achievement gap increasing. We need to go back and reflect on that. There might be a problem, or maybe we should do this. We don't see that in the post. We don't see that in her press releases. Instead, what we see is cheerleading. And the second thing is, if we're really going to be data-driven and use, the 7 or 8 weeks that teachers are forced to give up to standardized testing right now in DCPS, that really takes away from the teaching and learning in the schools and in the classroom, if we're really going to dedicate all of that classroom time to testing, then when we're looking at the data, we need to see the data. And instead, the data has been so manipulated that we can't see it. And I'll give you one example. According to preliminary analysis, Michelle Rhee reported that, and the Washington Post reported, that elementary schools in 2010 had a decrease. And then she reported that secondary schools in 2010 had an increase. However, if you look at how she reported that, she reported the AYP.
The adequate yearly progress?
Right. Under No Child Left Behind, the AYP increase. Now, under AYP, the students who are in secondary schools are only the students who are in traditional secondary schools, like middle schools and high schools. Secondary students who are in elementary schools, because they're in these K-8 models or K-10 models that have exploded under Michelle Rhee, are not being counted. What that means is when you look and you see that we had increases for secondary students in 2010, there are 2,300 students, secondary students, that are not included because they go to school in K-8 models. Now, that data is completely useless. What does that tell us about student achievement if we are excluding 2,300 students?
And it's not just that we're excluding 2,300 students. We're excluding certain students. For example, there is not one middle school in Ward 5. And so if you're saying that to get the testing, if you have older kids and younger kids, you only use the younger kids? Where they have these, what are they called, educational campuses? No.
Yeah, educational campuses.
Educational campuses, meaning you have the elementary school and the middle school kids together, which is all you have in Ward 5. So no child in Ward 5 is included, if I'm understanding this correctly, in the data that you are putting forward. And the
data that Michelle Rhee is putting forward.
Right, sorry, the data that Michelle Rhee is putting forward. And can you talk about where, so Ward 5, we have the educational campuses, Ward 8, Ward 7, but not necessarily in Wards 2 and 3. So it's not just the 2,300 students are being excluded. There are certain students that are being excluded from the data, which may in fact give rise to this bump in the numbers that is being claimed.
Absolutely correct. I don't know a single K through 8 model or education campus in Ward 3. And I don't know of any in Georgetown. And you know, in parts of Ward 2, it's possible. But in Georgetown, you have Hardy Middle School. In Ward 3, you have Deal Middle School.
I just mentioned in Hardy Middle School, the principal, Patrick Pope, was widely popular for opening up, keeping the campus as a citywide where a lot of African-American students were there. And he's been, quote-unquote, promoted to a school that doesn't exist. So Hardy could become more of a neighborhood school, meaning possibly more of the white students that are right there will be taking over. And so he's now been promoted out of Hardy, and there's a lot of controversy around that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you used the word neighborhood school, because Michelle Rhee, the Washington Post, have used that word over and over again to describe some of her education reforms. You know, neighborhood school is really the new PC word for segregation. Hardy in Ward 8 was a fabulous example of what's possible. 80% of its students were out of boundary.
Hardy's at Ward 2.
Ward 2, I'm sorry. Yeah. It's a great example of what's possible. 80% of the students are out of boundary. It was the only school that drew students from every ward of the city. And they all came there to be successful. Over 80% of the students were African American. It was the, until this year, actually, it was the only school in D.C. to make AYP more than 10 years in a row.
Chris Bergfock, on the issue of data-driven and Michelle Rhee, there's also the example of the recent scores in the D.C. CAS, which said there were increases. And you look closely at those numbers and saw that while there were increases, they were not nearly as big as was claimed, and that the way this bump in numbers was achieved was by testing fewer African-American students. And this I've seen reported nowhere. Can you explain this?
Yeah, and it's fairly complicated issue. We can start back when we go back to way secondary schools. The secondary scores have been reported in 2010 for AYP. So Michelle Rhee says, you know, for secondary schools, doesn't qualify. It says for secondary schools, for secondary students, they had this increase. Well, we just learned that the numbers she was quoting are only for secondary students who are in traditional secondary schools. So there are 2,300 students that are secondary students that are not in secondary schools, in schools like Ward 5, and those students who are being excluded are disproportionately African American, disproportionately students who are ELL or who are English language learners, and disproportionately students who qualify for free and reduced school lunch. So the poorest students are disproportionately in these K through 8 models where they are being excluded from the data that she's reporting.
And that needs to be understood, that because of history, because of the present, because of where resources are moved and not moved, not just today, but over generations, African American students test lower. And so when you exclude them from the testing, this is a way of bumping up your scores without, in fact, improving student test scores.
Yeah, and here's what I want to be very clear about this. There are reasons for the achievement gap, and those reasons have nothing to do with parent bank accounts, family ancestry, or the color of your skin. And a great example is, we talked earlier about Hart Middle School. It's a school that is on the wrong end of that achievement gap. It's a school that is failing drastically compared to Deal Middle School or Hardy Middle School. And what we saw was that Hart Middle School was getting the smallest amount of dollars. It had the lowest pure pupil allocation of dollars in the city. There are reasons for this achievement gap, and there are ways to address the achievement gap. Another example is this capital spending. We mentioned it earlier, and I recently saw this in the Washington Post, and I talked to the woman who gave this information in the Washington Post from the DC budget office. Now, under Michelle Reese, she's had over $1 billion to spend on capital spending, on fixing, renovating schools. And what we see is that she spent disproportionately more on the wealthiest neighborhoods, on schools that are already succeeding, on Jerry Weiss green schools. And she spent the least amount, only $54 a square foot in Ward 8. Consequently, 75% of the students who go to school in Ward 3 go to school in a renovated space, go to school in a really new, clean, well-equipped teaching and learning environment, versus less than 25% of the students in Ward 8 in Anacostia, in the highest need, at the wrong end of that achievement gap, less than 25% of them go to school in a renovated space. There are reasons for this achievement gap. Dr. Jerry Weist said right away to identify those schools, like those schools in Anacostia, give them more money. They are not succeeding. There's an achievement gap. It can be fixed. And he's doing it. And in Washington, D.C., under Michelle Rhee, we see the education system turned upside down again. And we see the greatest amount of money going to schools that have the least need versus those that have the most need. And I know Pete and I talked about what it's like to work in those schools. For instance, in Ward 3, those schools have very wealthy PTOs, or parent teacher organizations. We used to call them PTAs. Now they have different names, partially because they raise so much money. So, for instance, at John Eaton, where I taught the last 3 years, the PTO provided supplies for students for the school. They also funded co-teachers. So they paid for and they funded and they hired additional teachers who are not part of DCPS to be in every single classroom, so classrooms could have two teachers instead of one. They funded a music teacher, and they funded an art teacher, so students could have, you know, students could have those academic that academic enrichment. Now you take that and you look compared to Ward 8, where there really isn't a lot of PTA or PTO money. So there's already a discrepancy. There's already a reason for the achievement gap, that the students who are in these wealthy schools already have far more resources. And then add on to that the way that DCPS's resources are being allocated. There is absolutely a reason for this achievement gap. And it can be closed. Dr. Jerry Weiss closed it. It closed in my classroom. Every year it closes in my classroom. It can close.
Chris Bergfock, let's finish up with this Labor Day special with the focus on teachers. You've discussed prior that about they're doing away with curriculum, and the focus is now on standards, which you can understand by testing everybody all the time under the Michelle remodel. And you mentioned a veteran teacher who said, "I feel like a new teacher," she said, because they're not using the same text. In fact, there really is a de-emphasis on textbooks, and now you're supposed to teach to the test so much of the time. And so folks who have been at this for years, for decades, are lost under this new system.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I want to go back to Jerry Weist, where we have an education system right side up. When Jerry Weist came in, he said that we revamped the curriculum. We gave teachers new tools to ferret out underperforming students. And the curriculum wasn't rigorous or connected enough. What we've seen in DCPS is the curriculum is gone. And the example that you mentioned, I know a teacher that's new to DCPS, but is a veteran teacher. She taught outside of DCPS and other school districts, and she told me the other day, "I feel like a new teacher because there is no curriculum. and I don't even know which textbooks I'm supposed to have or what resources there are. And Michelle Rhee has done away with that. Instead, she's put this focus on human capital. And what she's done is she's created this teaching and learning framework, which is a framework, not a curriculum. It's a framework. And her idea is that we'll, you know, that all the teachers are terrible. We'll get these new rock stars in, and they'll have this framework, and they'll design their own curriculum, and everything will be fantastic. And that's really not true. I also know new teachers this year who are brand new teachers with no experience, and there was no curriculum training, no textbook training for these teachers as part of the new teacher orientation process. So I showed and talked to these teachers, showed them what textbooks we're supposed to be using, how the textbooks work. They had no idea. It absolutely makes no sense. And again, it's another example of how this idea of human capital has really shifted the focus away from school reform and shifted the responsibility of superintendents to do what they're supposed to do.
Yesterday, Chris Bergfock, I saw Michelle Rhee. She was campaigning for Adrian Fenty to get out the vote. People are questioning whether that's a violation of the Hatch Act. But your final thoughts, and as we head to the September 14th primary, the school's chancellor is really stepping out to campaign for the mayor, and yet these issues that you've brought up here are not front and center, but maybe they should be, since she's inserted herself as a major component in this election. Maybe they should be prior to folks in D.C. voting.
Absolutely. And in terms of the Hatch Act, you know, technically, you know, that she might be okay. But it certainly violates the spirit of the Hatch Act. That's undeniable. And I think that that's a great example, because when you look at where she is campaigning for Fenty, it tells the whole story. She was brought in to fix a school system that was in disrepair, a school system that has the largest achievement gaps in the nation. She was not brought in to fix schools in Ward 3. Ward 3, those schools were always doing well. There were blue ribbon schools. Merch was a blue ribbon school. Those schools were always doing well. Jimmy Carter's daughter went to Wilson High School in Ward 3. Those schools are always doing well. She was not brought in to fix those schools. But where is she campaigning for Fenty? She's campaigning in Ward 3, parts of Ward 2. She's campaigning in the wealthy white areas. And I think that really sums the whole thing up. And what we need is we need to flip our education system right side up. We need to recognize we have the right people, and we need to support what they do in the classroom. And we also need to give them back their voices for school reform so they can once again advocate for the children of the city and advocate for closing the achievement gap.
Thanks, Chris Bergfock.
Thank you.